What kind of role will your organisation be taking?
We felt that if bow hunting is going to take place, especially on our patch in this area, we want to ensure, or do what we can to ensure, that the people that go out there to hunt with a bow do so with some very, very clear rules about hunter conduct and ethics. And this is quite above and beyond that, which the rigour that is already put in place by Game Council. We have rules of fair chase. We have codes of conduct about general conduct while you're in the bush with a bow, how you will present the club, and that sort of thing. But we want to make sure that if this is going to happen, then our members are very, very well educated and aware of their responsibilities to each other and to the general population.
I understand that you've done training with the Game Council.
Our club has been awarded authorised hunting organisation status, which means that the club is accredited to conduct licensing examinations. We do not award licences. We simply put people through the process of applying for a licence. We provide them with the Hunter Code of Conduct, the guidebooks that give people the answers that they need and the education that's required to be able to hunt safely. And if people pass that examination, then we give them a receipt which goes off to Game Council, and Game Council from that point on makes a decision about whether or not that licence will be awarded. Really, we're about making sure that people can apply for a licence, and we oversee that process of applying for a licence.
If someone has been approved, how do they then go about organising a hunt in a national park?
You first have to book that hunt. That has to be done in advance. You have to be given permission to conduct that hunt. And that will only be given if the area is open for hunting. I mean, that's got to be the first criteria, if it's open for hunting. And that's not every national park, and it's not every state forest. And then it's up to Game Council then to allocate you a date, a time and an area. And those things are very, very strictly regulated.
How will parks visitors know if hunting is taking place?
They'll be able to look on the internet to find out, first of all, if an area they're planning on going to is a designated hunting area, and if there are hunts booked in that area. There will be a need for everybody to act responsibly. And that would include, I'd have to say, members of the public not seeing a bow hunter and going, I wonder what he's doing over there. I'll just go and follow him for a while and see what this hunting business is all about. There needs to be a healthy respect from hunters and other park users about giving each other distance, frankly. Hunters are all strongly encouraged, it's mandatory in fact, to wear blaze orange clothing. They will be able to be identified. The wonderful thing about blaze orange is it's a colour that most animals can't see, at least not as blaze orange. And I probably would encourage members of the public to invest in a blaze orange cap and wear that when you're bushwalking. It doesn't hurt for everybody to be able to see everybody else, I believe.
What would you say to someone who might say to you, look, I'm a bit concerned about this, about going into a national park and there's going to be people bow hunting in the park. Should I be concerned?
I don't believe people should be concerned specifically about bow hunting in particular, because bow hunting requires a hunter to get very close to the game he's going to take. I mean, stalking is really the process that most of us are in it for, and you really do have to get very, very close to game. The possibility of mistaking game for something else, or mistaking something else for game, I think is hugely mitigated by the fact that you have to get so close. I also think that bow hunters in particular are a very responsible group of people. They are generally people that are following a tradition as much as a sport, and I think there's a very high degree of ethics and good conduct within the archery community. We must always be absolutely certain that what we are aiming our bows and arrows at is a species that should be taken, and something that we can recognise as a species that must be taken. And clearly human beings are not on that list. If I'm not very, very certain that I can hit my target and take it down with a minimum of distress to that animal, and there will be some distress, it's the nature of hunting, if I'm not completely satisfied that I can do that, I don't take the shot. That's my personal decision, and I'm happy to come home empty-handed. I don't feel an all-pervading need to come home with something for the freezer every time I go out there. And I think that's another issue. There are hunters and there are hunters. Some people, like myself, take game to use the game in its entirety. There are other people, I guess, who go hunting for other reasons. It's about education, I think, and trying to encourage good practice. And I think the community does that. Clubs do that. And that's why our clubs become involved in this process, because we want to try to assist people to go in, enjoy the sport, to nurture and preserve a very ancient traditional skill, but do that in a responsible way.
Is proficiency one of the tests before getting the licence?
No, proficiency is not one of the tests before getting the licence. However, if you are in clubs, most clubs will have a club proficiency test.
What of a situation where there was a club member who wasn't particularly proficient? They would still have a right to get the licence, though, I presume.
They would. They'd certainly have a right to apply for the licence. The licensing process is about licensing people in safe practice. That's its focus. I think it's up to clubs, such as our club, to try to reinforce the need for all the other aspects of hunting good practice.